It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right, welcome back to Money for Lunch. Good to have you all here. Hey, did you get your taxes filed on time this week? 18th. Monday was the last day to file the taxes on time. Hopefully, if you didn't do that, you filed an extension. If you didn't get to do either of those, then check out my good friend Mary King at TaxLawyerFlorida.com, TaxLawyerFlorida.com. She is known as the problem-solving attorney, and she'll take care of all those taxes. Let me rephrase that. She'll take care of all your tax issues, questions, all that stuff. She'll answer. She'll be glad to talk to you for free. Just say that Bert sent you, and kind of go from there. Taxes are crucial, kind of a crucial pain in the butt thing that we all have to take care of. All right. Hey, speaking of money, let's talk with our first guest, Angela Sloan, CEO and founder of Sloan Financial Group. Angela Sloan has dedicated herself to helping her clients secure their financial affairs. Unfortunately, at a young age, she was swindled out of her life savings by her trusted advisor. Yikes. This misfortune motivated Angela to make it her life's work to keep bad things from happening to good people. She specializes in income tax planning and managed money, conservative investments. She has expanded her practice to include estate planning, long-term care insurance, Medicare supplements, life insurance, property and casualty insurance as well. Angela Sloan, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here.
All right. So, you know, it's interesting how sometimes these tragedies in our lives, such as getting swindled out of your life savings, you know, has this, this positive impact on our lives as well. You turned it around. You took that lemon and you made it into lemonade.
Exactly. Even though I didn't really realize that's what I was doing at the moment. At the moment, I was that woman scorned, buddy. I was going to get my revenge. And lo and behold, I learned some things along the way. And, you know, at the ripe old age of 22, that was a whopping $14,440. But for a 22-year-old, that was devastating. And I said, you know, if I could find the man that did that to me today, I would kiss him right square on the lips. He has no idea what he did for me. So,
wow.
Well, I'm here to tell you.
Whether you're 22, 32, 42, or 52, $14,000 is a good chunk of money.
Sure, and it was really a good chunk of money back in the early 80s.
Sure.
So, you know, here I was sick. I needed the money to help with medical bills. I had two small babies and found out I had no money. So I felt like I was getting slammed from all angles. But, you know, life is what you make it. And
yes,
this
right.
has turned into a multi-million dollar business, and I never in my wildest imagination thought that this would ever look the way it looks today. So it's not my intent.
Absolutely.
But here
no, I love
am.
That. And it's just because you decided to position that event differently. I mean, if you would have just focused on getting even, you probably would have missed the opportunity. But you were able to turn it around and really, as you said, make it into this multi-million dollar business. And there's just such a great story and such a great lesson, life lesson in that. So congratulations to you.
But thank you. But the key to any situation is taking the focus off yourself.
Yes.
If you take the focus off yourself and you turn it into helping others, it's all going to work out fine. You're going to be fine. Just take the focus off of self.
All right. I love it. That's right. Take your focus off self. Let's talk about this. You have an IRA, IRA, or a Roth IRA. What's the difference? Should I take my IRA and convert it to a Roth IRA?
Well, the difference in the two is that with the IRA, you took your seed money, so think of it as the seed and the harvest. So picture yourself, you're sitting out in the field, you're a farmer, you're getting ready to plant your seed, you have this handful of corn seed, and the tax man comes along and says, okay, I'm going to tax your seed. You owe me taxes on that. And you give him this funny look, and he says, but you know, if you don't want to pay me taxes right now, I'll wait. You can plant that seed, wait till the harvest comes in, and I'll come back and I'll tax the harvest. So you ask yourself, would you rather tax the seed or would you rather tax the harvest? And I think it's smart to say, gee, I think I'd rather tax the seed, right?
Right.
Well, with a Roth, you're taxing the seed. With an IRA or a 401k, et cetera, you're taxing the harvest. We Americans didn't think that through. So, you know, we heard fancy words like tax deduct and pre-tax, and we said, oh, yes, give me some. And we didn't think it all the way through to what was going to happen in the end. And we were told, well, when you get to retirement, you'll be paying less taxes. And we all know that didn't happen because over the years, Social Security became taxable, and that, you know, that just threw a monkey wrench into everything. And, of course, even though the tax brackets went down, our taxes didn't.
Right.
So, you know, well, it's the difference between taxing the seed and taxing the harvest. So your other question was, should you convert? And the answer to that is it depends on each individual situation. There is not a cookie-cutter answer for this. I will say this. The older you are, the less it benefits you to convert, and the more it benefits your beneficiaries. So it depends on your overall family situation as to whether or not you should convert. You know, if you're younger, as I did in my case, was to try to get as much converted to a Roth as possible before retirement. Now, my husband retired from a major utility, and fortunately, we've been able to get all of his converted to a Roth already. So, you know, I love the Roth. I love the Roth conversion, but it has to be planned. I don't like to see people jump tax brackets because they converted. If you have enough time and you can do it systematically, it can be a smart thing to do. And here's the other thing. The Roth does not count for Social Security being taxed, which is a big
deal. Oh, interesting. That's huge.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? And I like what you did there. You were able to very easily explain the difference between the Roth and the regular IRA, and that is you tax the seed versus taxing the harvest. And I think the problem, Angela, that most of us deal with in the financial industry is that they have purposely gone out of the way to make it very convoluted, very difficult to understand. There's hidden fees. There's, you know, all these little things that you just don't know about. And
exactly.
You know, you think that a broker has your best interest in heart. Well, no, that's not true. A broker doesn't care what happens to you. He gets commission when he sells and he buys for you. And, you know.
Well,
and
now
so,
back to the broker. Let's talk about that a second. I don't think that the broker doesn't necessarily care. I think, you know, there's some good guys out there. The problem is they don't understand it theirself.
That's true.
You stop and think, folks that are out there in radio land, how many times has your broker ever asked to see your tax return?
Right.
And I'd be willing to bet none. In most cases, none. That ought to scare the tar out of you. That's a major part of our business. Today's tax D-Day, and I'm sitting here on the radio talking to you guys. It's very important that you have somebody handling your finances that does understand the taxes. But for the most part, those guys, even if they know it, they're not allowed to give tax advice. And that falls under the tax advice realm. Well, the problem you have your tax people who many times, most times, don't understand the assets. So you've got what one hand don't know what the other hand's doing, and you wind up letting things fall through the cracks unintentionally. But in all fairness to the brokers, they honestly don't know how to calculate whether or not you should convert to a Roth. So it's so important to have somebody handling your money that understands the taxes.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. No, I love that. And here's something that it took me a while to understand this, that if you do not have somebody helping you with your taxes, you are missing a key strategy or strategic part of your wealth equation. Foolish to not give this attention because you can in some cases pay more taxes than you should, which
exactly.
is no good. Or you can underpay taxes, which of course costs you more money. So paying the right amount of taxes and no more is crucial to your retirement and your wealth and your peace of mind. Let's talk about this. You mentioned a couple times about Social Security being taxed. Is that something that that is recently started? I was not aware that you were that they were taxing Social Security income now.
No, it's not. Let me give you some history here.
Okay.
Back during the Reagan administration, there was a tax reform done, and it came to the forefront that half of your Social Security had never been taxed. So the logic behind that, okay, you paid in half of what went into your Social Security. The employer had to match the other half. So the half that you paid in, you already paid taxes on that half. The half that your employer paid in had never been taxed because it was tax deductible to him. It was a business expense, but you never had to claim it as income. So after a lot of fussing and fighting, it was decided that if you met certain income levels, that your Social Security could be taxed. So up to half of it, 50% of it, could be taxed. Okay, as a tax person, I understood that. It made sense. If somebody's tax deducting it, somebody has to claim it as income. Well, fast forward to the Clinton administration. Another tax reform was done, and it was decided that if you met those same income limits, that 85% of your Social Security could be taxed. And you say, whoa, wait a minute. Based on what we were told before, under the first tax reform, 35% of that Social Security is being taxed twice. Shake your head, yes, that's exactly what is happening. And here's the formula for that. This is the simple formula, is you take half of your Social Security plus all your other income. If you are married filing joint, the Social Security starts to be taxed when that number adds up to $32,000. If you are single, your Social Security starts to be taxed when that number hits $24,000.
That's incredible.
Yes. So, and most people don't realize that that's going to happen. And it's really sad when I sit down to do somebody's tax return and they go, oh, yes, by the way, I retired this year. And they have their Social Security statement, and I get to give them the good news. So be aware, it can happen, and you need to know where you stand on that. So I tell people, you know, it's that left hook you don't see coming that knocks you out. Okay,
yeah,
you can plan for something if you know it's coming.
Yeah, that's incredible. That is unbelievable that, they you know, and like you said, it kind of makes sense at first because that, portion of the Social Security income was never taxed. And kind of makes sense. Just interesting. All right, so let's talk about this. Let's say I'm 62. I want to retire. I have dividend-producing stocks. Should I draw from my IRA or draw from my dividends, from my stock? What's your thought on that?
From a tax point of view, you should be taking the dividends from the stock because whether you use those dividends or whether you reinvest them, you're going to pay taxes on them anyway. Mm. So if you take from the IRA and say, I'm going to reinvest the dividends on the stock, you're going to pay taxes on the dividends plus what you withdraw from the IRA. So it depends on your tax bracket again. Can you take money from the IRA under the radar and reinvest the dividends? Again, that needs to be an evaluation done based on your tax return, but you're going to pay dividends taxes on those dividends regardless. So if taking money from the IRA is going to add to your taxable income, then you know, definitely take the dividends off the stock first because you're going to pay taxes on that regardless.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like that. All right, let's see. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about alternative investments. How can alternative investments save on my tax bill?
Well, some of them, like some of your REITs and whatnot, mm-hmm. some of your equipment leasing, they use accelerated depreciation, which passes on to you. There are some that report on a K-1, and you get all of the same tax savings that a corporation would get. So sometimes we see where those dividends coming in off the alternative investments, in some cases none of them are taxable, and in some cases about half are taxable. So you can get some tax benefits from those. Now, tax benefits are secondary. You don't want to be foolish and put your money into something too risky that you can lose it. So, you know, for every alternative out there, you know, there's probably one in every 300 or 400 that we would use. So you have to be very careful and know how to pick them.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's amazing. All right, so let's talk about this. Should I use the cash value in my life insurance for retirement? Now, I've heard, you know, that cash the cash value in life insurance isn't a great investment. So let's talk about both of those. First, should I use the cash value in my life insurance for retirement? Let's talk about that one first.
Okay, the logic behind that is that when you can draw income from the cash value of the life insurance, and it won't be taxable income. So it doesn't show up anywhere on the tax return because technically on paper it's a loan. Now if it was overfunded life insurance, so if it's over and none of your Social Security is taxed because of it either, okay? So if it's overfunded life insurance because you bought it primarily, quote unquote, for the investment, then yes, that can be a very good thing. If it's because the death benefit is needed for something, for some particular purpose, then you might not want to do that. But it is a tax-free way of getting income that don't flow to the tax return and causes Social Security to be taxed. So it can be a great way to get some tax-free income. You know, as can a reverse mortgage, for that matter, because it's the same concept, so to speak. But again, reverse mortgages, be very careful with them. And, you know, this day and time, people have to go through a lot of counseling and all before the reverse mortgage can be approved. And it's only something that I would suggest anybody do as a very last resort. But it is sometimes the house is the largest asset. So that is something that can be utilized if needed. Again, it's not taxable. So
right, because it's a loan.
You can save you on your tax bill. That's right.
Yeah. Gotcha. All right, so let's go back to my other question about life insurance. Should we just get term versus getting this universal or this whole life? What is your take on that?
Again, it depends on the purpose for the life insurance. You know, when you're younger and you have kids and you have a house mortgage and you need to cover that type of responsibility, term is fine. Term is perfectly okay. And the reason that term is so cheap is because something to the tune of around 98% of term policies are not enforced when the insured dies. So it's almost pure profit to the company. So therefore, they sell it really cheap. So you can get a lot of coverage for a cheap amount of money for a certain term, for a certain time period, which is why it's so cheap and why it's used for a specific purpose. So if you have kids at home, you know you're responsible for those kids, whether you're living or dead, and you've got to make sure that there's enough money, enough insurance there to replace your income should you die before that youngest child reaches age. So, or you might have a mortgage. You might have a 25-year mortgage, and you need a term policy to cover that mortgage. In those cases, term is fine, and it's the cheap way to buy insurance. For retirement planning, you really need more of a permanent type of insurance, and you can overfund it in order to get some tax-free income. And I'm doing this in a major way myself. I don't advise clients to do anything that I wouldn't do myself. So I'm also doing this on each of my grandchildren. So the overfunded life insurance can be an excellent tool to use, but you have to make sure that it's designed properly, or it can be taxable if it turns into a modified endowment contract. So in other words, what you're paying in and the coverage has to meet certain ratios. So you want to make sure that you don't violate those ratios and that it remains tax-free.
I love it. Hey, Angela, we're out of time.
It's very important that it's designed properly.
I love that. So, you know, bottom line is there's a lot of great opportunities out there, again, depending on what the objective is, and make sure that you get a professional to help you out. Angela Sloan, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing. Looking forward to having you back again soon.
Well, thank you so much, and you have a wonderful day.
All righty. Good stuff there from Angela Sloan about you and your taxes and retirement. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after
this.
Welcome
back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, my next guest is a rare find here among, I think, the Americas, maybe even all over the world. Henry Lee is known as the happy lawyer. The lawyer part of his life started at UCLA School of Law and spans 25 years, over 1,000 cases. His practice involves labor law, fighting for employees who were subjected to discrimination, harassment, and not paid properly. As a lawyer, he focused on helping victims become victors. The happy part was discovered through a series of family health crises and learning that happiness is a choice that starts with appreciating the smallest and sometimes most ignored parts of everyday life. Henry Lee, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you for having me. It's a great day.
It is a great day. All right, let's talk about this. So what happened? What was the wake-up that made you decide to be a happy lawyer?
The wake-up call came from cancer. Not mine, but somebody very close to me, my father. It was kind of a shock. It happened last year. We found out he had stage 3 throat cancer. And, of course, you know, your initial response is to panic and flip out, and that was his initial response. His first words out of his mouth were, "Why did this happen to me?" And, you know, at that point, we had a choice to make. We either, you know, fight and survive or, you know, he's just going to dwindle away. And that choice actually came kind of on the spot, you know, when I heard what he said. You know, the thought came to my mind, I cannot let him think this way, because half the battle with cancer, you know, with the chemo and the radiation, all that, half of the answer to survival is your attitude. If you go in with the attitude of woe is me, that's what's going to happen, is woe is me. And a quick side story, while my father was treating for his throat cancer, I didn't know this, but an attorney friend of mine, his mother was treating for throat cancer at the same time, same chemo lab, same radiation lab. We just missed each other because she treated in the morning, my father treated in the afternoon. And January 28th of this year, I took my father out for his 80th birthday. He had a nice birthday cake. Right after that dinner, guess where I went? I went to my friend's mother's funeral. She didn't make it. So I don't know if it was the mindset, but I can tell you it was an everyday thing of trying to switch his gear so that he's not thinking about my throat is bleeding, I'm in pain, and I have this and I have that. Every day was kind of, hey, let's look forward to this. Hey, look, you know, the traffic is really good. I live in L.A. Traffic sucks. You know?
And really, that's at 2 o'clock in the morning.
At any time. There's traffic at any time somewhere in L.A., and it's always bad. And his commute was absolutely horrible, you know. So we had to use this time constructively. You know, sometimes the commute one way from his house to UCLA would take an hour and a half. You know, this guy's basically deteriorating in my car. We got to use this time wisely. And it's you know, these little things that we looked at. Hey, what would you like to eat? You know, and the doctor's teaching me all these little things. You know what the main things I would call him and ask him about? Did you eat? Did you drink water? Did you sleep? Did you poop? Those were the four basic questions. This was a conversation for about like 4 months. And that's what got him through the day, you know? So through cancer, we learned a lot. My entire family learned a lot about just, you know, the basic formula of life. I have two, okay? One, stay healthy. If you have your health, you're way ahead of the game. If you don't have your health, you're in deep trouble. Get it back. Second thing, whatever it is, whenever it is, no matter what you do, who you are, where you are, be grateful.
Yes.
That's all it is. Be healthy, be grateful, and the rest flows.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. It's so vitally important to be grateful and be appreciative and not get, stuck on yourself. I think some of the biggest issues we have is people who get hung up on themselves and you know, they just have this little pity party, and pity parties never get better.
Oh, I will tell you, I mean, think about my career. I have to deal with angry judges, angry opposing counsel, and the clients that I have come to me in the worst possible times in their lives. They've either been fired or they got hurt really bad and then they got laid off. You know, this is one of the worst times in their lives. They're struggling financially, they're struggling mentally and emotionally. And talk about pity party, and they all come to me with a pity party, but part of what I've learned to do, aside from, you know, getting their case settled and getting them a check, is to work with them and say, hey, look, what did you do today? You know, did anything good happen? You know, you're legally required to find a job. Did you take that step? You know, so it's helping them through that really tough time. You know, kind of like it was like 25 years of training so that I could get ready to help my dad through that tough time. But I totally agree with you. Everybody has their issues and, you know, oh, woe is me, and the judge is yelling at me because I didn't do something, or the judge is yelling at the other guy, and then he gets mad at me. And, you know, it's just a very angry profession that I'm in. And like you said, it's very, very ego-driven. And at the same time, you know, I walk out of court kind of laughing, you know, these days. I walk in with a smile, you know, and the judge is like looking at me going, what's wrong with this guy? But, you know, I just appreciate the fact that I'm healthy, and then I could walk into court and I'd do my job. I mean,
right.
Whatever position I've ever held, you know, I realized that the best jobs I've ever had, and I've worked them all. You know, I used to be a door-to-door knife salesman, okay? One of the worst jobs you could ever think of, but I was happy because, you know, gosh, you know, I get to do this. I get to meet
right.
new people, and there's always something to be grateful for. We just overlook it because we're all stuck in traffic, commuting, somebody cut us off, or you know, I got to pay my taxes, like with Angela, you know. So we all get caught up sometimes, and it helps just to take a deep breath, look out the window, and say it's a beautiful day. I'm healthy. I get to enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Now let me ask you this: your moniker, if you will, the Happy Lawyer, is that? For lack of better terms, is that your brand now? Is that something that you blog about? I mean, talk to me about the Happy Lawyer. What is that, you know, what's all that about?
The concept of the Happy Lawyer is basically twofold. One, it is a marketing vehicle for me, and it's kind of slowly becoming my brand, and it's a brand that I'm using to market to clients, to business organizations. And a lot of it has to do with, look, like Angela was saying, you need to find a professional, one that knows what they're doing, definitely knows what they're doing. Well, I got 25 years of the lawyering part. I pretty much am confident that I know what I'm doing. But the other key missing ingredient, which I think, like you said, is a rare one, is that I actually have a positive attitude. And that's very helpful for the types of clients that I work with. You know, a lot of, you know, for lack of a better word, a lot of people want to hire the attorney who's a dick or an a-hole.
Right.
But that same a-hole is going to treat you like an a-hole too. You know what I mean? But the people who come to me, you know, they're not looking for just getting a check. They're looking for a little bit more. And whenever they have contact with me, you know, I try to, in every conversation, make them feel a little bit better. So in our office, our motto is basically, our client is our top priority, period, in any way, every way, we help them. If they call crying because they just lost their job and they can't pay the rent, we help them in whatever way we can. We work through the emotions. We work through the mental issues. We work through all of that to the best that we can. I mean, we're not psychotherapists.
Sure.
But after seeing 1,000 cases like this, I kind of know what works and what doesn't. And really what works with people, and this is what I try to message, is, you know, when my clients come, they come without a goal. You know, they come, their life's been destroyed. You know, what's the most important relationship you have outside of your family, yourself, and your friends? It's where you spend most of your day. It's at work.
It's at work, right.
When that relationship falls apart, it's just as devastating as a divorce. You know, and it's horrible. I have clients who've worked for companies 20-plus years, and they get canned because they're too old.
Sure.
You're too expensive. We need to cut you. So there's two aspects to the Happy Lawyer. There's the lawyering part, and then there's the happy part, because I have to. I have no choice. I have to help my clients deal with their internal issues as well as their case.
Yeah. You know, what I like about that, though, is that you're taking that extra step to get a little bit more involved so you can deliver a much higher or a much better customer experience, right? You can't solve all their problems, but you're going to help them as much as you can. And you know, what a great way to build your reputation, not only
it
as
helps.
A happy lawyer, but as just a good guy.
It helps because anytime a client comes in and has contact with me, whether phone call or at a meeting, I want them to leave feeling better, both about their case and both from the contact. And, hey, you know, he gave me a different perspective. Maybe I'll use it. Maybe I won't. But, hell, I feel better. And, you know,
yes.
How many lawyers do you know you feel good about, you know?
That's right. Well, you know what, and it's so easy to focus on the negative. People forget that a lot of the rights that we have today were advanced because lawyers or a lawyer or a group of attorneys cared enough to take the fight. You know, and we forget that. We forget a lot of our civil liberties were in part created because you had some attorneys who cared.
Absolutely. Look at my one of my idols and one of my, you know, people that I look up to and study. I mean, he's one of the greatest lawyers who led the first biggest civil rights movement ever, and that was Abraham Lincoln. You know, it goes that far, that deep, and he was an attorney, one of the best around, and he led the biggest civil rights movement, period, in our history. And I agree with you, you know. Yeah, people always focus on the negative, and then that's easier to do because it's easier to vent and be angry and point a finger and have a scapegoat. But, yeah, there's, you know, every profession has its good. Every profession has its bad.
Yeah, I think that, you know, over the course of my lifetime, what I have learned is it may not be your fault, but it certainly – your responsibility, right? It's not your fault that you got ripped off, but it's your responsibility to take massive action and correct that. It's your responsibility to, you know, make sure it doesn't happen again, that kind of stuff. You know, life isn't always fun, but it certainly can be a lot more fun than people live, right? They're just so... What's the word I'm looking for? They're just so stuck.
Yeah, people get stuck in a rut. And I'll tell you, you'll learn a lot sitting inside of a radiation lab where people come in to get the radiation therapy. And the saddest memory I have of that was seeing this 13-year-old kid get wheeled in. And he's so wiped out from his cancer treatments that the kid can't walk. 13! And I will tell you, that's a splash of cold water in your face. You walk outside and you sit in your car and you will thank God that you're not that kid and hope that kid gets better. I mean, when you're stripped down to the bare bone, you wake up and you get a cup of coffee. Hey, I jump up and down that my coffee machine works.
Right. Yeah, that's amazing. Absolutely. Yeah, you know what? And again, we started talking about being grateful, and I think that there's a lot to be said about that. We as a society have gotten away from being grateful. We've gotten stuck on, as you mentioned earlier, you know, what's in it for me? It's all about me. It's, you know, what do you call it? This entitlement and feeling entitled. Yeah. I think feeling entitled is one of the fastest ways to feel abused and lonely and sad. It's a terrible feeling.
It is. You're isolating yourself because you're holding in all those feelings, thinking the world owes you something, as opposed to the world's given you something. You say thank you, especially for my health, especially my family's healthy. And when you're thankful and you put gratitude out, you get more good stuff. You
know, yeah, absolutely.
Putting out the "I need more of this" and "I deserve it," that flow stops.
Let's talk about this. The book, again, is called The Happy Lawyer. It's available on Amazon. In there, you talk about the simply happy concept of finding fulfillment every day in every career. Talk about that.
Well, the book's name is Breakthrough Leadership, and I've got a chapter in there where I talk about this concept.
Breakthrough Leadership. All right.
Yeah, so the concept of simply happy literally is that happiness boils down to really simple things, like I said, to maintaining your health and gratitude. Those are two simple concepts, but they get so overly complicated. You know, people are always looking for some sort of enlightenment in these areas and stuff. There's thousands and thousands of books, and I've read a lot of them, you know, and I've went through the Catholic Church and all that stuff and through Christianity and studied Islam and all this stuff, but they all have the same simple message. It's really that. Be healthy, be grateful, treat others the way you would want to be treated. So, for example, I try to fight little battles and win the little battles and then build up to the big ones. Like, for example, waking up every morning, what's the first thought that you have in your head every morning when you wake up?
Every morning when I wake up, first thought in my head, should I get out of bed?
See, and so what I do, and this is the small bout, everybody can do this every morning. First thought in your head, thank you, I get another day to live. Because that's what I was telling my dad. When you wake up, you should be thankful you're alive. And I don't care whether you're stuck in traffic for 2 hours, you're alive. You get to see me again. You get to see your grandchildren again. You get to eat again. Thank you. Start the day off, first thought in your mind. No matter how many emails you got, no matter how many interviews, no matter what you're doing, first thought, simplicity. Thank you. I get another day. And you'll see the more and more you do that, your days actually become a lot better because you've started off on the right foot. Regardless of whether or not you want to get out of bed, that's a different story, right? But first thought, thank you, I get another day. And then you build on that.
And you build on that. I like that so very much. You know, you mentioned about sometimes people get fired after they've been with the company for 20 or 30 years. That sucks. But you had 20 or 30 years.
Correct.
You should be happy and thankful for that. Now, the message here, at least one of the messages here is, look, if you've been working for a company for going on 10 or 15 or 20 years and you don't have a bunch of money saved up, then you need to make that change. You need to be grateful for the time you're there. Realize that all of us are limited. Any time now, a company can be bought, shut down. I have a friend of mine who had 4,000 employees, got into a fight with the federal government, and they came in and they shut his company down with no warning, put 4,000 people out of work.
Wow.
Now, it took 2 or 3 years going through the legal system to get that straightened out. And he won. He prevailed on everything. But it took 2 or 3 years, and those employees were gone.
Yep.
So be thankful is absolutely the right way to go. And then number two, you know, you got to prepare. You got to prepare for the fact that sooner or later your job's going to end. And if you're not saving money, I'm just throwing this out there because, you know, this week we're paying taxes and money is on top of mine. If you're struggling to pay your taxes, you need to save more money. You need to have maybe a better tax plan. If you've been with a job for a while and you are afraid that you could get laid off or fired, you're afraid because you don't have enough in savings or in retirement. So start looking at that. And just be grateful. I love the idea of being grateful. Get up. Not even get up. The minute your eyes open up, I love the idea of saying thank you. Thank you for another day. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to roll out of bed, get to work, to love it with my family. And then the other thing that I've learned, you know, my brother-in-law, he was, my sister-in-law, his wife, and my son were waiting on him because they were going to go to dinner. And he's taking a shower, and he's kind of taking a long time, so the wife goes to check on him. He is found dead.
Oh, my God.
And what a wake-up call.
Help.
You start counting your blessings, and you're trying to, you know, and you're you're thanking God that you have another day. Let that experience sink in. Some of the people listening today have had something very similar to that. You mentioned about your friend's mother who didn't survive throat cancer. So, you know, death is a guarantee. And I think gratitude is an option. And I think that the more we gear towards gratitude, the happier we're going to be.
Agreed. I absolutely agree with you. I mean, when you start the day saying I'm thankful and thank you, you know, you'll notice little things throughout the day. Like, hey, I had one of my obsessions in life is a good piece of chocolate cake. Okay. So it might be that day I run across a really good piece of chocolate cake, and that's a sign to me saying, hey, you're doing a good job. Here's your reward for being grateful. You just
sure.
Little things like that. You start the day off right, and it just builds from there. And your attitude changes. You see things that, you know, you maybe never have seen before, and you may be a little more tolerant of the person who cuts you off in traffic because maybe they're about to get laid off or they got fired and they're pissed. I don't know. But you're not so engrossed in what's going on and them cutting you off and taking offense because you're just thankful that you're enjoying the day. You started it off right. Good things are going to happen to you, and they inevitably do.
Absolutely, absolutely. Henry M. Lee, I want to thank you so much. I am so grateful, and I want to thank you so much for stopping by today. Looking forward to having you back again, talking more about breakthrough leadership. And this is your latest book, Breakthrough Leadership?
That's our first best-selling book.
First best-selling book, Breakthrough Leadership, available on Amazon. Also, you can find The Happy Lawyer available on Amazon. Henry, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Bert. I appreciate it, and you have a great day.
All righty. Good stuff there from The Happy Lawyer, Henry Lee. We're going to take a short commercial break, and then we're going to be back with The Happy Marketer, Perry Marshall, right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Bro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
This is so cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, who's next?
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
All right, we are back. My next guest, Perry Marshall. Perry Marshall has been on the show two or three times, best-selling author, New York Times best-selling author, one of the world's most expensive and sought-after business consultants. Clients seeking for his capacity to integrate many desperate fields, engineering, biology, chaos theory, mathematics, physics, and psychology. He has launched two online revolutions. In pay-per-click advertising, he pioneered many of today's best practices and wrote the world's best-selling book on internet advertising, The Ultimate Guide to Google AdWords. More recently, he applied the 80-20 principle to more facets of business than any other author, being the first to expand the 80-20 as an infinite fractal law of nature. 80-20 is the central lever for nearly every profitable strategy in sales, marketing, and business. His book, 80-20 Sales and Marketing, is required reading in many growing companies. Works also include bestseller Ultimate Guide to Facebook Advertising, Evolution 2.0, Breaking the Deadlock Between Darwin and Design, and Industrial Ethernet. Perry Marshall, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Hey, it's great to be here, and we kind of got a funny topic here today, but I tell you, I like that last guy, you know, that gratitude thing. I mean, we all get stressed out about stuff, and, you know, last night I was laying awake, and there was, like, this whole situation that I was thinking about, and I was like, okay, hang on, thank you for, this whole list of things. So I don't I didn't really know that guy. I don't know who he is, but I was liking it when I came on and was hearing it. That was great. Thank you.
Absolutely. No, I think it's great to be reminded, especially, you know, we get lost in the day-to-day stuff, and it's good to be reminded that it's our attitude is foremost the most important, tool or strategy that we control, and out of that, I think gratitude is probably the most powerful of the attitudes that we need to have.
It is. Gratitude attracts gratitude. It attracts reasons for gratitude. It attracts grateful people. It repels negative people. Man, it's good. It's just good.
All right, so let's talk about this. You, during April Fool's, you started an FTC prank, and it went viral. Why don't you tell the audience about your FTC prank?
We like to do April Fool's jokes every year, and an email box is the best place to do it, you know. So I posted this. The Federal Trade Commission announced today that starting January 1, 2017, the use of personality in marketing will be forbidden by federal law. According to the Office of the Executive Director, flamboyant personalities have foisted fraudulent schemes on the public for years, allowing enterprising individuals to prey on unsuspecting consumers who believe that they would receive benefits from their purchases. We are combating this by demanding the removal of all personality elements from advertising. And so I sent this out, and, you know, the most common blog comment was like, oh, Perry, you really had me there for a while. Oh, man, I was scared to death. And, you know, and then the other common comment was, well, given the trends lately, it was really believable. And, hey, seriously, you know, like, they don't want you making guarantees. Like, what? You know, like, well, how else are they going to know it works? My goodness. So, really hit a nerve with this one.
Yes. Well, first of all, you know, it was done well. It was such a great headline. So let's back up a little bit. I think one of the reasons that it caught so much attention is because it had a great headline. The headline was Federal Regulations and Full Disclosure About Advertising, and then it had a great sub-headline, you know, regarding the new rules, and I think that just caught a lot of people's attention.
Yeah, well, you know, people are afraid of the government, and,
yes,
you know, mostly the way I feel is that, hey, as long as the Republicans and Democrats are evenly matched and they're just fighting with each other all the time, they won't be able to do very much, and they'll be able to leave me alone. And I think that's probably roughly how most entrepreneurs feel. You know, oh, would you just leave me alone? I'm really working hard. I'm really doing my best. I don't need any more hassles. I don't need any more IRS. I don't need any more regulations. You know, and there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes. Like, for example, about 4 or 5 years ago, Google AdWords really started cracking down on advertisers, and it turns out that the real reason that this was going on was the FTC said, hey, we're going to start fining Google for the sins of their advertisers, which all of a sudden, like, now Google's looking up in the sky going, so where's the next hammer going to drop?
Right.
And so they started, like, banning all kinds of advertisers and never telling them any reason why. And the reason was is, well, Google doesn't know if any of these guys are good or bad. But if any of them turn out to be bad, then Google's going to end up getting fined. I think that's very unfair. I mean, it's one thing if Google knows that they're scamming people.
Right.
Okay? Like, that's totally different, right? But, like, you know, there was this bad guy, so here, we're going to find you. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, that's got to be, like, unconstitutional or something.
Well, you know what, and that goes to fact, and I think one of the reasons that the government does that is because Google's easy to find, and Google has pockets.
Now, if Bob the scammer rips off people for a couple of $1 million and then he disappears, well, he's going to be hard to find, and the government could spend $1 million just finding him. And a couple of $1 million sounds like a lot of money, but in the world of the FTC, it's not that much. As opposed to Google, a big, fat, juicy, profitable target. Put the onus on them. The thing that's interesting is, some of this obviously hit such a nerve with people because, as you said, I want to say 80% of the people that you and I know, maybe more, are good, hardworking, will refund you if you're unhappy kind of people.
Yep.
They're just out there trying to do the best they can with the products they have. And then back to your 80-20 rule, right? 20% are probably just scum that you and I would never deal with. And unfortunately, the public is going to get ripped off. And you know what? What's interesting to me is there is an affiliate, platform called ClickBank.
Yeah.
And ClickBank, I think, has a lot to answer. I mean, some of the products that they have on ClickBank, and I can say this is my opinion, are questionable. I mean, some of those products are like, back to what you were talking about. Hey, lose weight without doing anything. Make money in your underwear 24 hours a day by downloading this free software. Whatever. It just, come on. It goes back to, some of that does need to be put on the platform, like ClickBank or maybe Google. And back to what you said, if they know it's a bad individual, then yes, they have a higher standard. But, so it's just so funny that this thing hit such a nerve that it just exploded on the internet.
Well, I don't know how much this kind of thing hurts small business. It hurts jobs, but it's a lot because I can tell you, all right, being the guy who, taught more people to do Google AdWords than anybody, when Google started dropping the hammer on all these guys, like probably a third of my customers just disappeared.
Wow.
They just went away, okay? If you were in any kind of a category that was risky, that's emotional. So alternative health, entrepreneurship, make money, any of that kind of stuff, anything that's a little bit off the beaten path, they just tighten down the screws. And, I got to say, Google AdWords is one of the biggest benefits and boons for entrepreneurs and small business to happen in the last, 25 years. I mean, there's probably tens or hundreds of thousands of businesses that exist because of Google AdWords. And then all of a sudden you throttle that down, right? So you've got the Obama administration saying, we're trying to create jobs. Like, well, you've got entire departments that are trying to kill jobs, Mr. Obama. And it's really sad. And I think to some degree, can you let the marketplace sort it out?
Well, you know what? And I'm glad you brought that up because I want to point this out. Speaking of letting the market sort it out, and this has nothing to do with the advertising per se, but it has to do with watching the market unfold itself. Look at what these people did, whether you agree with it or not. These fast food workers got a raise for making a bunch of noise. Now, people have argued that a fast food worker should not be paid $15 an hour. There are people who've gone and become and have gotten a four-year degree and have become certified and literally put their life on, in their hands. You have a pair, EMTs that handle life and death situations. Our military folks make a lot less than $15 an hour, and they literally put their life on the limb. So therefore, the argument was that these fast food workers should not receive $15 an hour.
Well, they took it to the market. Yes, they got people involved. Yes, they got the, you know, that's what the market's supposed to do, is you got people involved and they got their way. Now, we'll see how the market reacts to that. But I like the fact that the market in California, the market in New York and a couple other places have said, okay, $15 an hour. Yeah, we're going to let that happen. Now, we've already seen that McDonald's, and by the way, it's not a reaction. I don't think it's a reaction to getting the $15 an hour thing passed. McDonald's, over a year or two ago, started playing around with kiosks. A lot of restaurants, Jack in the Box has kiosks where you can walk in and place your order. A couple other places do too. So, you know, in one sense, I think the fast food workers were smart. They got their money that they wanted. But it's going to be short-lived because a lot of them are going to be displaced again by bots.
You know, I love that you brought this up because I run different mastermind groups. And in one of the mastermind groups that I was part of, one of the people in the group had a relative who owned Subways in, I think it was Seattle. Isn't Seattle one of the cities where they were raising the minimum wage to $15? And he said, well, they are reacting to this by automating everything they possibly can. But then he said, there's another thing going on. He said, there are very highly skilled workers who are moving into Seattle to take those jobs. Okay. Which is to say that, okay, yep, the wage goes up from $9 an hour to $15 an hour, but then the people that get those jobs becomes a different set of people. And so markets always have their funny way of finding equilibrium. And, you know, a lot of these things, they sound really good on the surface, but then, and, you know, I'm not coming out and saying, well, I'm just against raising the minimum wage. What I am saying is there's always unintended consequences.
Yes, absolutely. Look, you know, back in the day, I think I might have been 15 or so, maybe 17, I don't know. I was fairly young, maybe even younger than 15. But, you know, Detroit went through that revolution where a lot of their workers were displaced. You had a slowdown in car sales, but at the same time, you had robots that were being introduced into the workforce to do these repetitive jobs. Well, guess what? It's happening everywhere. You know, right now, and I can't remember, it's a high-end Ivy League school said that all of that right now, 47% of the jobs that we have today, Perry, will be replaced by some type of robot or artificial intelligent computing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and you see it everywhere. It's happening slowly but surely. Cars that can drive themselves. I mean,
if you have a smartphone, then you have bots, right?
Yes.
Everybody has bots. And what this means is that if you want to stay ahead of the bot, you have to learn to think. And, you know, as a person who teaches marketing, you know, the most natural posture that a student has, the average person, is, okay, show me the 12 steps to get a result so that I can run through the maze, ring the bell, and get the cheese.
Right.
And, like, just, like, make it really simple. Now, what I want to do, and you'll see this at PerryMarshall.com if you go read anything, is I want you to think. I want your brain to really know what goes on. I want you to be able to figure it out for yourself because I want you to be an adult entrepreneur, not a entrepreneur in diapers. And so if you're a thinking adult entrepreneur, then you can use the bots and the bots will serve you. And if you're not a thinking entrepreneur, a bot will replace you.
Yes.
I love that. I love that. A bot will replace you. And you know what? I think that, you know, this is a wake-up call. If you think that your job can be replaced by a robot of any type, then it probably can. And this is time for you to gear up and either start investing in your own business, start looking to upgrade your skills, do something, because it's going to happen, whether it happens this year or 3 years or 5 years from today, it's eventually going to happen. More and more of us are going to be replaced by, you know, again, robots or cognitive machines, if you will. There is no, what do you call it? There is no, what do you call it? Shortage of the solutions that people can come up with. Mm-hmm. And like you said earlier, for each solution that we come up with, there's going to be unintended consequences.
That's right. So put on your thinking cap every day. And, you know, it's wisdom and discernment and insight and the ability to infer data, a conclusion from data, you know, that those are things that a robot can never do.
Yeah.
You know, a robot can only obey instructions. I mean, I've got a beautiful MacBook Air, and it's got however many gigahertz and everything else, but it's as dumb as a box of rocks. It's garbage in, garbage out. And so we all have a challenge. Use our technology as wisely as we can and not be slaves to it.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Perry, always good to have you on the show, my friend.
Always good to be on the show.
Looking forward to your next prank, and we'll have to have you back sooner than later. Perry Marshall, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
Good stuff there from New York Times bestselling author Perry Marshall. We covered a slew of stuff there, but you know what? I love Perry Marshall. I love the way he thinks. You can check him out at perrymarshall.com. All his books are available on Amazon. Happy stuff from Henry Lee, The Happy Lawyer, and it's all about the gratitude. Angela Sloan talking about tax tips, keeping you as wealthy as possible while simultaneously paying your taxes. Remember, you
work great. Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website.